Blog Talk Radio. Jenny Greenteeth is a well-known character in British folklore, sometimes going by the name Wicked Jenny or Ginny. The tale originated from the Lancashire region in the northwest of England. The legend is thought to sprout from the all-too-common water plant known as duckweed, which grows in masses in still bodies of water. The green, small, leaf-like bodies of the plants clump together to form a carpet-like covering on the surface of the water, often giving the illusion of solid ground. Many an unwary traveller or frolicking child have stepped right into the water, expecting that it was surely to be solid ground beneath their feet. It's said that Jenny, the evil witch, lives in such places, beneath the surface. A wrinkled old hag with green, gnarled skin, she is said to have long, claw-like hands, lanky limbs, and sharp, pointed teeth. Drenched in water weeds and moss, she is said to have long, tangled hair, and some legends tell that she has unnaturally long arms and fingers, used to drag people down into the water. It was said that once she had drowned her victims, she would devour them. The Oxford Dictionary of English Folklore describes that in Lancashire, Cheshire, and Shropshire, from the 19th century to within living memory, children were threatened that if they went near pools, the water spirit, Jenny or Ginny, would catch them. Some said that she also lurked in the treetops, where she could be heard moaning at night. According to Charlotte Byrne, this bogey was an old woman who lurks beneath the green weeds that cover stagnant ponds. Children were warned that if they ventured too near such places, she will stretch out her long arms and drag them to her. One account tells that further I have been often told by my mother and nurse that if I did not keep my teeth clean, I should someday be dragged into one of these ponds by Jenny Greenteeth, and I have met many elderly people who have had the exact same threat applied to them. As recently as 1980, a Merseyside woman, aged 68, recalled what she had heard about her as a child. Pale green skin, green teeth, very long locks of hair, long green fingers with long nails, and she was very thin, with a pointed chin and very big eyes. Another informant, however, said Ginny had no known form, due to the fact that she never appeared above the surface of the water. She was especially associated with stagnant water, deceptively covered with thick algae or duckweed. In fact, to some, Jenny Greenteeth was simply a name for duckweed itself, and the horror consisted in the way this weed would close over anything that fell into the water. In more modern times, the legend of Jenny Greenteeth has adapted. Many a drain, sewer, tunnel, or canal is said to be haunted by the terrible witch, as well as the more traditional, natural bodies of water. In 2018, the legend of Jenny Greenteeth was cast into the public eye when an Australian tourist snapped a photo in the St. James Cemetery in Liverpool. The image shows a dense, overgrown part of the cemetery, and what could be the figure of a long-haired, shadowy woman standing nearby amongst the plants. According to local legend, years ago, a homeless woman with bad teeth, thought to be a witch, lived in a makeshift hut in the cemetery, and she was nicknamed Jenny Greenteeth by the locals. A cautionary figure, the tale of Jenny Greenteeth has been told to many generations past. She's particularly well known in the north of England, lurking deep below the water, waiting to strike at anyone that may find themselves coming too close.
Hello and welcome to Into the Darkness. Here you can richly paint in the outer limits of your voice, where dark ink becomes an odyssey of the imagination, told in crashing waves of turmoil as emotions are awakened and set to canvas in haunting fashion. I am Pam Ray. With me is my co-host, Intimidus Rex. Rex and I are poets on a website called All Poetry, with a group of poets called Late Night Poets. You don't have to belong to the group or the website to call in, to share, to listen, or enjoy, but it is highly recommended. Tonight is our dark poetry night. If you find that is not your cup of tea, please check out our other shows. We have 1 to 2 shows per night on a variety of styles of topics and poetry, something to suit everybody's taste. And tonight's topic, as you could probably tell from the introduction, is the legend of Jenny Greenteeth, also known as Ginny Greenteeth or Wicked Jenny. And Rex and I ran a contest on All Poetry where we had pictures, artwork of Jenny Greenteeth, where people could write to one of those. They could also write just to the legend itself. Or, you know, they could take it literally or metaphorically. However they wanted to take their darkness was absolutely good with us. And I, for one, am definitely looking forward to delving into tonight's dark poetry. And hello, Rex. What's up, Buttercup?
Not a thing.
Just taking it easy, huh?
All right.
Yeah. So, isn't it interesting how so many of these dark legends seem to have been created or for the purpose of scaring children into brushing their teeth?
Sure. Why not? Scare the boss.
Yeah. Exactly. I actually decided to do something a little different for an intro. Usually, obviously, we have a music intro. I do admit that I did look for a song about Jenny Greenteeth. Probably could have eventually found one, but I found this. And I thought, you know what? Let's open up the show with, you know, a video about the legend and how it's grown and changed over the years. And, you know, and I thought, because then as we're reading the poetry, as we're getting into the poetry and commenting on it, you know, I mean, and I think a lot of people, obviously, a lot of them, especially from the Lancashire and Yorkshire area, and even other countries have different versions of this, but, you know, they'll know what we're reading about. But for anyone who doesn't, you know, it kind of gives you more of an idea of the legend itself. And all right, so we'll go ahead, we'll get started. And what do you got for us first, Rex?
The tale, both sad and cautionary, of poor curry-loving Mary, by Old Codger. Mary's ma said to her daughter, "Don't go too close to the water." Ginny Greenteeth there and waiting patiently and salivating. Down below, she hopes to meet you, greet you with, "Hello," then eat you. Mary, heed what I am saying. I won't stand for disobeying. As you will have guessed, young Mary didn't listen, and unwary of the dangers posed by fishing, soon had Mary's mother wishing. Ginny had seen her daughter standing so close to the water. Now poor Mary, so browbeaten by her parents, had been eaten. During supper, sometime later, something odd struck Mary's pater. "Wifey, is there something missing?" Mary's mother, reminiscing, told him of their naughty daughter and how Ginny Greenteeth caught her. "Oh, no need to worry. I'll eat up all Mary's curry and gone."
Oh, great read there, Rex. Very entertaining. I enjoyed that. Now, when I put up the contest, this one actually wasn't in the contest. Old Codger put this out as a comment on the contest board, asking me if I, telling me I might like to check it out. And so I did, and I thought, you know what? I like this. Let's, you know, I asked him if it could be on the show. He was graceful enough to say yes. I love the rhyme and flow in this. To me, rhyme adds to the classic element. There's great inner and end rhyme. I like how, like I said, there's a wonderful dark humor approach to this, and it really touches well on the idea of how such legends as Ginny Greenteeth was used to scare children into disobeying or to obeying. And, it was a wonderful cautionary tale. And like I said, I enjoyed the dark humor, and especially at the end. Mary's mother reminisced and told him of their naughty daughter and how Ginny Greenteeth caught her. "Oh," said Pa, "no need to worry. I'll eat up our Mary's curry." So wonderful lines there and very well done. And Rex, you did a great read of that. Your thoughts?
I like the humor, and it goes a little further than the normal Grimm's angle, where everything was meant to scare the tar out of children into actually listening and obeying their parents. This one walks a more humorous note to the thought of, oh, well, we've lost a daughter, but no need to waste the food.
Absolutely, absolutely. There's never any reason to waste some good curry. I think of another part of the humor to it, the dark humor, is the obliviousness of the parents, almost up to, like, well, I guess the mother's not oblivious, more like the father is. Wonderful comment there, Rex. And what do you got for us next?
It's by Sapphire Root. Got Sapphire.
All right. All right, here we go.
It by Sapphire Rose. An eerie presence circumambients the swamp. There in the silence, evil viler than stomach acid. It crawls and slithers along the cobweb recesses of my waking nightmares, shutting my eyes as I move amid the damp corridors of this underground cavern, the air thick with the stench of 1,000 gamey corpses. The dank walls are closing in. It is closing in. I run my dagger nails over my thighs, no longer feeling comfortably numb. The scream escapes from my water-parched throat. I feel like a moth pupa locked inside a titanium cocoon with no pin to extract me. I exist within the confines of my fear. An idle mind conjures psychopathy. I'm floating in a pool of my own deeply rooted traumas. Winter's cascade of blistering cold encircles my throat. A distant silence screams in my ears, forcing me to project my soul to a field of lavender blooms. I'm a bleeding heart, a wound that no longer heals, a wailing mandrake root that has been plucked from its earthbed. I'm a broken compass, a starving kitten who cannot fight its way out of a wet paper bag. It is closer now, ready to pounce like a panther in the night. I avoid full eye contact, frozen in horror amid the numerous gamey corpses. The last minute, I lose all semblance of what's real. My body cold, my eyelids heavy, my thoughts weary. The it is upon me now. I cast my thoughts far from its grasp, no longer afraid. I stare dead into the inescapable odious of its eyes, dropping my gaze as the vile filth of the it witch seals my fate. End poem.
Wonderful read and write there, Sapphire. Thank you for the SoundCloud. It is very much appreciated. And just a reminder, everyone, if you're unable to call in, then the next best thing is to make a recording of your poem, because then we get to hear your poetry in your voice. And Rex, your thoughts on this write?
Oh, that clearly holds the note to Stephen King's It, the original from way back when. And it's on those noted thoughts of that which sticks in the craw of one's mind and scampers out when the need arises to remind you of that which you are always afraid of. The deeply rooted traumas, something going back in childhood. And it was some notes to, a wailing mandrake root that has been plucked from its earthbed, a little Harry Potter thought in there. I'm a bleeding heart, a wound that long heals, a broken compass, a starving kitten who cannot find its way out of a wet paper bag. That's kind of a little cliche. And then again, I avoid full eye contact, frozen horror amid the numerous gaming corpses. Again, it's kind of a notation to the movie itself. But it still holds, even with the thought of no longer being afraid, there is that essence of knowing you are going to meet your fate, but at least you're meeting your fate on your own terms as far as holding yourself up instead of being afraid of that which has always corrupted your mind.
Absolutely, absolutely. I like how you mentioned that, you know, it's that those fears that come back to us over and over again and just kind of dig their claws into our minds. And I like what she had to say in her AN about the prompt I chose reminded me of the movie It, you know, the creepy clown. That movie gave me nightmares for years, so I thought it was time to take back my power. And I do think writing out our fears in poetry is a great way to take back our power. I really liked the visceral imagery in this, like especially with lines like of the underground cavern, the air thick with the stench of a thousand gamey corpses. And another part I really liked was, I feel like a moth pupa lost inside a titanium cocoon with no pin to extract me. I exist within the confines of fear. Those are some powerful lines to me on the way that fear limits us, and how we can only go so far in life with fear. And then, of course, the end lines are where the power is grabbed back. The it is upon me now. I cast my thoughts far from its grasp. No longer afraid, I stare dead into the inescapable odious of its eyes. I like how, in order to pay tribute to the movie and to the fear that it gave her, she does keep putting it and it in capital letters, which I thought was a really nice touch. And I do have to go back to you and mention the bleeding heart and the mandrake. And, you know, I like that, you know, because, you know, the mandrake being a type of plant, and the bleeding heart also being a type of plant, I thought it worked really well to put those two together in that stanza. And so wonderfully written and very well done. Great dark light. And what do you got for us next, Rex?
When naivete is ignored by Ubachi. That was yours.
All right. Let me adjust the size of the letterings, and here we go. There exists a dungeonous darkness. It is called ignorance. No candles flickering, the clarity of consciousness trapped inside society, waking the planks between fractured ideologies. Why, society, do you act so innocent when the tables are turned upside down, as if you're not the cerebral zombie apocalypse of ignorance, chattering a box of silence, or you walk beside those in the hangman's noose, or even molecular juice? How many ways must innocence repair itself for you to slumber so eloquently deluded, as if the future of anyone is promised, protected by a betrayal over everyone? Who is anyone? As if you're not the teacher leading and leaving the scars of unnecessary correction upon and beyond your spiraling staircase of those whose pleas and naivety you choose to ignore. End poem. And what a wonderful metaphorical look at society, and you know, I definitely will give in a more in-depth comment, but first, of course, Rex, I'd like to hear your thoughts.
That first stanza, the there exists a dungeonous darkness. Now that word had me thinking, it doesn't fit exactly unless trying to make another thought out of it. So this dungeon with O-U-S is not a word itself. Then I thought of crabs, dungeonous crabs. So as an illusion, you can roll it. There exists a crabby darkness. It is called ignorance, which fits the motif. So I'm thinking that she probably went that way as a note to it's not just about the dungeon itself. It's about what lurks within that, and the idea of always sidestepping that which should be answered and taken care of. The idea of claiming ignorance when you know better, especially when naivete walks its line. And there are plenty of naive ones out there just because of circumstance. You hit on those with mental disabilities. They tend to be the most naive of us because they walk the same line as young children. They believe in what they see, what they're told, and what they believe to be told, yet they find out later on by a twist of circumstance that not all things are as they seem, but lived in the real world yet, so to speak. But they hold a different tone because they're only naive because they don't open their eyes. The other ones are naive because of circumstance. So the idea of it's easy to offer up, your heartfelt thoughts to something, but then you backtrack and walk away from it when circumstance initiates, hey, I'm not getting into this this fractured fairy tale, which leads down a rabbit hole that no one wants to go into. And it just hits back on the idea of lying to give the appearance of something that you're not.
I like that. Wonderful observations there. Yeah, I really like how you focused in on the ignorance and naivety, the way that people accept the lies that other people tell them as they're growing up, but also the lies that we choose to keep telling, that people choose to keep telling themselves. So and choose not to open their eyes to what's going on. I thought this was a powerful and thought-provoking write all the way through. There, throughout all three of the stanzas, there were lines that I definitely appreciated. I would say, though, that that second stanza was my absolute favorite. The why society do you act so innocent when the table are turned upside down if you're not the cerebral zombie apocalypse of ignorance chattering a box of silence. You know, it's so easy to remain silent and feign ignorance allow that those ourselves to be walked into that hangman's noose. What I really liked about this one is she did take it on a metaphorical level. She looked at the idea of the legend of Jenny Greenteeth, the idea of being pulled down into the water, you know, and lost beneath the duckweed to me, and how there's no coming back from it. And I think to me this speaks on the whole idea of the consequences of what we choose to not see. So powerful, right, and very well done. And what do you got for us next, Rex?
Acne Man by Peter Solway. Pimple brain, full of pus, off to a bad start, following orders. King dictating, where was I? Yes, face set to burst. My mentor, pedophile victim with skin condition. Don't be some shy Edwardian transsexual composer of horror through the gross outs, all plugs, blood with putrid yuck. Condoms full of maggots, bursting in Spanish vaginas. Madonna of pus, giving birth to ugly flies. Bullfights. Hoodies in alley, bladders relieving, urine flammable as service station petrol. Foreskin burning, smell sickening. KKK, lesson to the grand aunt. Source of menstruating virgins in tractor shed. Last drive out of town. Hack horror painted to dip brush. Graveyard deep. Shovel to slop. Skull strike in congealing muck. Lick such arts. Pluck sable in personal pus. Maybe vomit. Give it some texture. Like Goebbels' fingers screen tested. Using artist jaws. Yes. Or pilot. Study at the bacon. Loose painter having better fun, sick of chopping up women, Ophelia so pretty drowning, Millet unbuttoning, give up schlock, plagiarism of horror fiction, movie making next best thing, holding hands with the Fuhrer, so exciting, see the theater, Trump with silver nitrate, Lens work by Lena, great looms of light and dark, happy with the Fuhrer to explore, but a painter of skin conditions, dated as Dolly, winner of biennial, lost in the internet, girl guide bachelors, oh, for forbidden sights. Internment camp of iPhone belonging, patient of atoms.com, everybody coming, commandant.com. Address, most properly, emperor, president, skyrocket over equator, cells of blind wants. All the torturing victims at home, content with circumstance, electrodes attached, questions asked. Answers forthcoming. Sister, a shade-headed bitch. Brother, a drunk prick. God, a senile joke. Signed, Nietzsche. Why write such puerile trash? Speak up, after. Speak up, author of Pimpleface, or we will up the bolts as law decrees, burn more of your ink sausage. Knob of bandwidth. Stick prick thinks. Better than penis or dick or skink. Serial rapist, the wobbliest piranha tackle. Go fishing for some French tourists. Theming Amazon, where all westerns come to an end, valley of guns drawn and handled, tourists with thick voyeurist sunmetal, looking at the looming sights, tower of London above, oh, such a big one, swift axe, ship passing through, all crews, captains on decks, expendable with masks, women vampires who wish to be self-sufficient, suck blood of screaming seamen, yell at passing planes, shit where they stand, Doris insistent, put out bins. Go bowling to other districts, wife on the weekend, rain or shine, no fun, a bum shrine of Vaseline. Bill to decline, stay at home and wine, clock at wound up time, breakfast of magazine. angels, all lookers, masturbate alone, noon coming, dream of younger friends, Venus by the sea, sexy before her death. Modern fucking living, no proof of anything, poodle poop out there on passing pavements, women with tight shorts, plankton bagging her hound, me with pensioner's machete, letting her blood run free, swearing, a rotten cemetery, dirt and all that's slimy, injecting truth serum into me, forcing white artists to talk, tell my big fertile secrets, keen on vineyards and touchings, warm grapes squeezing, prelude to wine, good times with Saint Slut. What luck? Bottle found up his arse. Yes, gross out, the king says. Eat your fiber-rich breakfast, sweet grass. And poem.
Bravo, Rex. Great read there. I have to say, wow, that holy moly macaroni. Talk about just visceral, almost nauseating imagery, which almost to me has an over-the-top type attitude that I think works very well. I like this all the way through, and it's so much to absorb. To me, let's see, the general tone I get from this, especially as the beginning where it says, you know, king dictating, whereas was I, yes, face set to burst my mentor, pedophile, victim with skin condition. It feels like the whole passing on of evil from one generation to the next. It has a very serial killer vibe, but not a serial killer that just, you know, like a partnership between a mentor and a student. And so much to look at here. Some wonderful references. I like the religious references, condoms full of maggots bursting in Spanish vaginas, Madonna of pus, give birth to ugly fly, bullfight. There's that, like that whole idea of that fine line between obsession and religion. I do like the nod towards some artists like Francis Bacon and Dolly. I thought that was very good. Give up schlock plagiarism of horror fiction, movie making, next best thing, holding hands with the Führer, so exciting, the theta. I love the way he has those lines put the accent on. And I really like how those lines to me speak on the idea that what we've done is we've taken the same concept, the concept of scaring people into obedience, and taken it from storytelling to through word of mouth, through storytelling and imagery, through through cinematography. Wonderful lines all the way through. Another part I really like is up the steaming Amazon where all Westerners come to an end, valley of guns drawn and handled, tours for sick lawyers on metal. Because there's a duality to that. Because, of course, you know, you think of the Amazon River, but you also think of shopping Amazon and how we can so easily lose ourselves in all that there is to see and buy, and be everything becomes important. Great alliteration in here. Poodle poop out there on passing pavement, you know, woman with tight shorts, plastic bagging her hound. Just the idea of all the, you know, all the shit that needs to be cleaned up because the mind is bombarded by such vulgar and visceral thought. And so really just intriguing all the way through. And like I said, so much to delve into that, you know, if I even managed to cut any little bit, it was only the tip of the bud. So very well done, though. And Rex, you did a wonderful read of that. Your thoughts?
Fight is in transgressions. What mankind is willing to put forth. I mean, that second stanza, my mentor, pedophile victim with skin condition. And that's what condoms full of maggots, first thing in Spanish vagina, Madonna plus giving birth to ugly pies, bullfights, notes to corruption of church, plus the condoms full of maggots hit on the note of sexually transmitted diseases, and you've got the KK play, lessons in the granddaughter barbecuing, source of menstruating virgins, tractor shed, last drive out of town, packed car, painted the dip, brush, graveyard deep. You can walk that one a couple of ways, and they both would work. And the thought of maybe vomit, give it some texture, like Goebbels' fingers, screen testing, using artist yawns. Yes, we'll try that. Study, Dr. Bacon. Goebbels offering up a double thought there, running it as capital, as the thought of Goebbels, Germany's minister of propaganda, and then the Anton Sickert chopping up women, reference to maybe Sickert being Jack the Ripper, although that's been long gone as a thought possibility. Ophelia, so pretty drowning, note to Ophelia in the pond, and Millet unbuttoning, not quite sure because I was thinking of millet, which was food, but that's clearly not it because it's capitalized, so I'll check that one. He mentions sort of Dolly in here, changeless skin condition stated as Dolly, so it hits on that note of walking back in time to the puerile nature of some arenas as opposed to others, and that which goes on internment camp or by phone belonging, patientadams.com, everybody coming, commandant.com. That hits on the idea of what tech companies are doing to everybody these days. Let's see what else we got. Then he walks into the future, shaved-headed bitch, brother of John Frick, got a senile joke by Nietzsche. Walking into the 20th century and the steaming up Amazon. I think it's a double draw to that. Might be the Amazon River, but it will also mean Amazon, the company itself. Bring up the Tower of London, cruise and captains. Then he gives a little break and goes into the modern angle, bowl into other districts. Ah, hey, not satisfied with this one. Let's go plague and infect another one. Because this all walks in that sort of everything that is plaguing and giving force to the rotted morality of this current configuration we are living in.
Oh, I like that. I like how you bring up, I mean, you brought up a lot of great thoughts, but the idea of the lack of morality and the corruption within the church was, I thought, another great point that you brought up. So excellent comment there, Rex. And what do we got next?
You have Come Little Children by Dark and Doris. And you got a sample out of it.
Oh, that's right. What a wonderful treat. All right. And let me go ahead and find that. And here we go.
Come, little children. As little children played nearby, they heard the lost and lonesome cry of a beauty in a wedding dress, bewildered in a state of unrest. They came closer, asking what was wrong. Her cries turned to a siren song. When boys stepped too close and didn't see, hidden beneath the lake-stuck weed, long bony fingers reaching out, they grasped the kid as others shout. The rest took off in fearsome screams from a nightmare of their wildest dreams. The boy was a feast for Jenny Greenteeth. Her former life had made the perfect sheath. With no king in a tux by her wedding gown, she fashioned his bones into a crown, cackled insanely into the night. So easy to lure children, isn't that right? She said to her reflection of a beautiful bride what she had looked like the night she had died.
wonderful read and write there, Darkened Auras. Thank you so much for the SoundCloud. It is very much appreciated. And Rex, your thoughts?
I like the layout. It bites as a nice note to a grim story, and it is a grim story. Don't get me wrong, but it works on that note of grim fairy tales, which weren't really fairy tales. They're moral stories, and it kind of hits on the same note. But I like the thought of she fashioned his bones into a crown, nice touch, and then cracked them insanely into the night. So he's a little children, isn't that right? She said to a reflection of a beautiful bride, what she had looked like the night she had died, that the feeding on the children still gives her the essence of beauty in the moment to remind her of what once was, past the notion of what she really appears to be.
Absolutely. I like that you brought that up. There was a nice touch to the story, and great comment there, Rex. It definitely is a tale of warning. As usual, on a technical level, Darkened Auras has great rhyme and flow. I like how she took the classic tale of Jenny Greenteeth and brought more into it, more depth of detail. But she brings in the classic stuff such as, that the mention of duckweed. One boy stepped too close and didn't see hidden beneath the lake's duckweed, long bony fingers reaching out. So she has classic elements of a Jenny Greenteeth story, such as the fact that she was known in some parts to have long, bony fingers and hide beneath the duckweed. But then she goes into more detail in the whole thought of how, as you were mentioning, keeping her youth, keeping her beauty that she had on her wedding night. And I, too, really liked the mention of she fashioned his bones into a crown, cackled insanely into the night, so easy to lure children, isn't that right? And I think those lines work particularly well because it's not only the idea of how easy it is to lure children, but how easy it is to lure people who don't think for themselves. So just an excellent dark write and very well done. And all right, what do you got for us next, Rex?
Let's see. Rick Cage, The Barbican Torture Smell by Time Teller. That was yours.
Mine? All right. Oh, yeah, I suppose it would be. All right. So let me adjust things. Here we go. Ribcage, The Barbican Torture Cell by Time Teller. And it goes like this. Within this skeletal structure of loyal friends that surround this temporary space, like ribs around a thorax and belly, lives my dream. I say dreams. It's been so long since I searched for a way forward, that they are more like the bones of forgotten elephants and have themselves become a prison of do or die. For without the help that was once not needed and now is a requisite of others, I will remain here inside these bones, rotting in sinful bliss. The surround sound of their thoughts within testing trials and tribulations, seas made rough and endeavors that like boats are holed at the bottom and bombed on the top, ensnaring me here in need. There are blue lights on the high seas with ropes and warm soup, but I must follow their path or I must give away the little accumulated things that just about keep this carcass of blabber afloat. Things hard earned to be thrown away, sold for little of what they were acquired for, alternatively work for those that have stripped this carcass of all its dignity. I am a monster within a monster, within a very much bigger monster of opinion and collision from the seven seas has me rotting with all my possessions, refusing to let them go, because they watched me buy them, knowing what they were doing. Premonition, like a prescription drug offered by quack doctors from a traveling wagon, leaving me here with everybody or nobody. And I always take the hard route rather than be flaky and use people. So here I am to remain within this cell of ribs, slowly sinking into their bloodstained hypocrisy and their collusion of help and prophecy, refusing to accept their destiny. End poem. And I have to say, that's definitely an amazing dark rite with just strong imagery and metaphors. And Rex, your thoughts?
Well, TT offers a note of understanding the monster that has been created, the monster within the monster, with a very much bigger monster of opinion. And then that last line of the bloodstained hypocrisy and the collusion of help and prophecy refusing to accept their destiny, there is a quiet note of already accepting that destiny, even while refusing it on the back end, because you hit on that note of collusion, you hit on that note of the, let's see, the pills, or what else? There was a number of things on that. Premeditation, like a prescription drug offered by quack doctors from a traveling wagon, meeting you here with everybody or nobody. But there is that notice of actually buying into that, the surround sound of the voice within testing trials and tribulations, ensnaring me here in me. Understanding that, yet calling out the hypocrisy on the back end, I can't help thinking that there might be a touch of huge hypocrisy as well, because you might think you're walking outside the box, but you're actually walking within a separate arena that still holds you tied to the thought of not being yet. Your heart's not really in it, so you're still sticking to that which you have, even though you didn't really want those things to begin with, and you sell them off here or there, yet you still walk in and deliver yourself onto the delusion.
I like that. I like that. Wonderful thoughts to the whole idea of the delusion of our own hypocrisy, how we so easily recognize it in other people, but not necessarily in ourselves. And I like that you brought up those lines, I am a monster within a monster within, a very much bigger monster of opinion. I like how, as you mentioned, he takes a look at the idea of being the monster and the creation of the monster. And what I like is that this is the idea of somebody imprisoned within themselves, within their own mind, within their own body. You know, maybe even like with the idea of being imprisoned within your own spirit and you know, all the lies that you've told yourself. I really like the imagery and metaphors in this. There are blue lights in the high seas with ropes and warm soup, but I must follow their path or I must give away the little accumulated things that just keep this carcass afloat. Things had to be earned, to be thrown away, sold for little, what they were acquired for. And I like how he personifies the possessions, rotting with all my possessions, refusing to let them go because they watched me buy them, knowing what they were doing. And there's such an idea to me of selling our souls, of ownership, of self given to the idea of wanting to, you know, be up there in class or wanting to, you know, it almost makes me think of the whole idea of, you know, just keeping up with the Joneses, but in an extremely dark way, in a way that, you know, we would rather kill off who we are than let go of that which is, you know, causing us to drown in this life. And so just powerful, right, all the way through and very well done. And what do you got for us next, Rex?
It Was Not Me, It Was Not Fate by Brooker. Some dearest John stood froze, afraid. Entranced, he held a single shoe. He just returned down tracks unpaved, a common path he always knew. But on the journey outward bounds, he was companioned by a friend. But looking around, no friend was found, no sign of fight or foe extend. I walked up wary of his state, to hear a chant beyond his breath. It was not me, it was not fate, became the words he whispered best. Oh, dearest John, why won't you stir? Why won't you reach me with your eyes? At this, he stepped back with a stare, saying, he's gone beyond the living, where living lies. Then, like a rock into a pond, he fell down crumpled to the ground, still staring at some state beyond. His body flinched for every sound. I slapped his face to catch his fix and shouted in his ear his name. But he was still and stayed betwixt. Some place had caught his scent of flame. I tried to rouse and raise his mind, but each attempt inflamed his grief. I took the shoe for clue to find, but force became his senses deep. He tried to mouth some simple plea, then shuffled to his knees to pray. I asked, you tell me what you see. Be bold thou, John, in what you say. For murmurs and curse gargled voice, though somewhat weak, while looking at me still aloft, he asked permission for to speak. It was not me, it was not my fate. He feigned repeated several times, and then once courage past did wait. He began to tell what telling finds. It came on quick, those limbs so strong, to drag and drape the waters do. He was too old and death too strong, my eyes but blinked and down he drew. I heard him scream the sufferer's song. He left no mark but for the shoe. What crime had he committed wrong? What ills had he inflicted you? To me, I said, to me, dear John, I think you mixed me for a beast. His voice now raised, his eyes near shone, saying, you had my friend for food and feast. Again I snapped and slapped his cheek to try to make his fears deflate, and rustled in his ears to speak. It was not me, it was not fate. I dragged him quick beneath the tarn, that dirty, rotten, rancid plate, and ripped dear John from neck to arm, from life, from love, from sense, from state. I drunk disaster's raging gloom. I peeked my eyes from water's weight to wait for some lone stranger new to tell it was not me, it was not fate. And boom.
Wonderful read there, Rex. I really, really enjoyed this one. It was an excellent story poem, a great take on the prompt. I like how you can see where it's inspired by the legend of Jenny Greenteeth, and yet it takes on a life of its own. I don't know if I've seen Brooker's name before. If I have, I apologize, but I don't think I've seen it a whole lot, so it's great to see someone new to the writing for our Into the Darkness show, or at least, you know, haven't seen in a while. So, you know, this had a wonderful flow to it, as I said, great storytelling. I like that it's, you know, to me it has the feeling of almost like a detective, a police detective interviewing somebody. And it's interesting that he starts out with some dearest John, you know, because, you know, automatically there's two things I think of when I see the word, the name John, especially as it's put, like, you know, some dearest John is a dear John letter, somebody who's been dumped, whose heart has been broken. Yeah, I also think of the fact that, you know, customers of prostitutes are called John. Now, whether he just meant that or either of those or not, I don't know, or if he just liked the name John, but it's kind of interesting that he said, some dearest John. And, you know, I like how he goes into the story of the friend that just disappears and the consistency of this John just insisting that it wasn't him. It was not me. It was not fate. He fain repeated several times. And then once courage clasped his weight, he began to tell what telling finds. This has wonderful rhyme and flow. Great look at crime and where the guilt lays. And actually now that I'm looking at it more, maybe it wasn't a police detective, but maybe I think a psychologist or psychiatrist. I always get too confused. I tried to rouse and raise his mind, but each attempt to flame his grief, I took the shoe for clue to find, what forced between his senses cease. So I guess it could go either way, but I like how this takes on the idea of somebody trying to figure out what's going on, what the truth is, and the truth is right in front of them, and yet it's so difficult to speak on. And I like how this takes on the raving of a madman who has seen perhaps a friend pulled under by Wicked Jenny and cannot get himself to speak again of the horror of it. So excellent story style, Dark Wright, and very well done. And Rex, you did a wonderful read of that. Your thoughts?
Well, the Dearest John kind of hit on that note is the Dear John letter, but also Mike Mark the thought of the John reference being sexually motivated. Green as Jenny's hitting on that note of wanting something that she was not given as once, where once she was beautiful. But there's that thought that walks within us, and they came across, well, this person came across John. He's babbling incoherent. He's not making a whole lot of sense. And then offers up that note, and a question, what ills had he inflicted you? Question posed to the narrator itself. To me, I said, to me, dear John, I think you mixed me for a beast. His voice now raised, his eyes near Sean, saying, you had my friend for food and feast. Again, I slapped his cheek to try to make his fears deflate, and rustled in his ears to speak. It was not me. It was not fate. I dragged him quick beneath the pond, that dirty rotten ranted plate, and ripped dear John from leg to arm, from life, from love, and sense, from state. I drank disaster's raging brew, and peeked my eyes from water's weight, to wait for some lone stranger new, to tell it was not me, it was not fate. So it's a quiet note to the duplicitous nature of the creature itself. Had been seen, yet was loath to actually have the notes of that visage on someone's lips to the point where it could be raised as some alarm. And there again, the back end of the offering, the thought to it was not me, it was not fate, is the idea. Just because you come along doesn't mean it was fate. And the idea, it was not me, is just a questioning, just a noted conundrum, even though she knows it is her, and it usually is fate.
I like that. I like that. And yeah, that's great observations about the voice of the narrator of the story. So very cool. And I'd like to welcome Dexter to the show. Welcome, Dexter. Glad you could join us.
Hey, glad I could be here.
How you doing?
Hey, Rex. Doing well.
Excellent.
Awesome. Awesome. And did you get a chance to read that last poem?
I did. Part of it just kind of had the tone almost of that Edgar Allan Poe, the cast of, yeah, you know, it almost had the feel or the tone of that, you said it was from a certain standpoint, but it just, felt to me almost like the reasoning almost of like of a killer or something. I don't know. I thought it was a very intriguing write, but I just felt like it had very, and I thought it was very well done, but it had very Edgar Allan Poe almost feel to it, in my opinion. So I thought it was a brilliant write.
I like that. Great observation there. And yes, you're right. It did kind of have the feel of like a madman or a killer trying to reason his actions, which does have a Poe feel. So great comment. And Rex, what do you got for us next?
Witchy Witch, Greeny Leech by Rain 474. And that one's yours.
All right. Dressed in coat and tie, I look an awesome guy, blooming like a rosy joy, as enjoyed by the young boy. But as the crawling feet of sun pulls the curtain of the dark dawn, wearing the gold-green gown and roaming in the whole town, donning the witch hat and perching like a bat, as I poke my nose large in every part of my garage, cooking the broth of filth mixed with sin, swindle, and scandal bath, with the twisted rheumatoid fingers and twirled pointed dead cells on hunt, while the falling streaks of silky hair covers the crooked enchanting stairs, sucking the last breath to survive, so that the old wrinkled witch to revive, raining all the weak dead souls who now act as crew to play foul. Oh, holy souls, there's no escape, poles and home. And Dexter, since you're the new kid on the block, let's start with your thoughts.
You know, this had a... you know, I thought it captured the prompt very well. I was just kind of looking over the prompt and going back and forth between the poem and the prompt. And, you know, it captured that green, which is, I think, in all of them. But this had a very serial, you know, maybe I have a certain way of viewing it, but it's had a very serial killer tone to it also. Maybe it had some mythological tone to it. But I think that a lot of the myths and the mythological things are based on real life. You know, I think that from a certain point, beasts and sucking the last breath to survive, vampires, I think all of it has been at some point influenced by the evilness of a real being, you know. And I think that they do a fine line of walking the prompt, which is an evil witch, but also breathing life into the reality of it. So very well done.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, there is a sense of reality and mythology balanced out within the line. So great comment. And Rex, your thoughts?
It's got a note of Halloween flavor to it. You got the clean dressed note for the guy to start with, but then you roll in. But as the crawling feet of sun pulls the curtain of the dark dawn, wearing the gold green gown and roaming in the whole town, donning the witch hat and perching like a bat, there is that note of mischief on the loom, and then put my large nose in every part of my garage. That's where it gets a little cooking the broth of filth mixed with sin, swindle, and scandal bad. There's a note to urban texture and that which nobody notices mixed into the middle of their own town. While the falling streets of silky hair covers the crooked, enchanting stairs. There's an easy note to the sort of a, yeah, I can cover up the ugliest part of me at the moment, because I'm always getting stared. Yet the thought of the shocking last breath to survive, so that the old wrinkle wish to revive, is that note again of taking it's her crew now that the play foul angle on the obvious note of falling and birds, the one-step block around her. Oh, holy soul, there's no escape hole. That kind of walks that note to the back end of Halloween, right as the midnight hour strikes. All Hallows Eve into All Saints Day. Yeah, there's no place. There's no going there from here.
I like that. I like that. And you're right. You know, it does have in those first few couplets the idea of a young boy, a young child dressing up for Halloween. And then it starts to get progressively darker. As you were commenting, I began to think that it kind of gives to me the thought of the idea that, you know, if you play with fire, it will eventually burn you. You know, the idea of getting deeper and deeper into evil. I really did particularly like those lines, cooking the broth of filth, mixed with sin, swindle, and scandal bath, with the twisted rheumatoid fingers and twirl-pointed dead cells on hunt. It really, some of the imagery within these lines really did a great job of capturing the description, the oftentimes known description of Jimmy Greenteeth. And I also really like sucking the last breath to survive, so that the old wrinkled witch to revive. Really great lines there, wonderfully written couplets, and very well done. All right, Rex, what do you got next for us?
Wicked Jenny by Kingsley Medlin. And Dex, this one's for you. Uh-oh, did we lose Dex?
Yep. All right, here we go. All right, this was Wicked Jenny by Kingsley Medlin. In Cheshire, I'm known as Wicked Jenny. I bet you a pound to a penny. If you saw me, you'd wish you had not. I'm not something easily forgot. I'll stay in your nightmares and creep into your dreams. Across the plains, you may hear a scream. As I snatch up another small child, I'm a thing that from English folklore, but these myths start from something someone once saw. I can be found in ponds and in the canals, hiding under the floating duckweed. Some say that I've been seen lurking in the upper branches of trees. So beware, for if you see duckweed, then I'm close. I'm around. I'll pull you into the waters and hold you there until you drown. I'm a pond elf, a monster, a river hag, a green-skinned, tangled hair, nasty old bag with long, slimy hands and razor-sharp teeth. If you see still water, then I just might be beneath. It might be the last thing that you ever see. As a child growing up in Cheshire, we knew if Wicked Jenny, the area where I live is called Weaverham, which means the village on a river. It is confluence with rivers Dane and Weaver and Trent and Mersey. Canal passes the village, and there are numerous mirrors and ponds. The old hag could be waiting anywhere. End poem.
Great read there, Dexter. I'm really glad that Kingsley Medlin, after his poem, put in that little note about, you know, where he grew up. And I think it was great to have that read aloud and to get more information. Not surprisingly, because we are doing a show that features as a prompt a legend that takes place, originated from the Great Britain, England area. We did have a lot of poets and a few poets enter from that those particular areas because they knew of the legend. They grew up with the legend. And Rex, your thoughts?
Well, on the back end of this, he took on a little tongue-in-cheek thought to the Jenny herself. I'm a pondo, a monster, a river hag, a green skin tangle, haired, nasty old bag, with long, slimy hands and razor-sharp teeth. If you see still water, then I just might fit beneath. And maybe the last thing that you ever see. But that, I like that thought with the note, the tongue-in-cheek, but everything else hit on the idea of the story that he learned as a kid, especially that last stanza. Even though he knows better, it's still the idea that it's been something around, been around for hundreds of years, and it's always been told to the kids, and it's always been delivered in such a way as this. Usually a poem, a little short story, something that gets to stick in the kiddie finds and always remembered.
Absolutely, and that's a really good point you make there about how oftentimes tales like this, legends like this, are presented in the form of a poem or a story that will stick in the children's mind. And so, excellent comment. And Dexter, your thoughts?
Yeah, I thought that this was a great write, and kind of almost, you know, obviously because of the nature, I think, of your guys' prompts, is that kind of ties into my last comment about how it kind of, it always has to almost derive from some type of reality, right? I mean, I don't think that, I've heard Jack Fresco say that people aren't creative. Creative is almost a fictional thing. It's like, because creative means you take something out of nothing, and we never take something from nothing is what his whole point was. And I don't know if I fully agree with that or not, but there's some sort of taking from reality. And I don't know if I've said this story before, but my mom's friend growing up, she had somebody kidnap her by, they pulled the knife out straight from underneath her bed when she was a little girl and put the knife to her neck. And so when you talk about the ultimate fear, it's happened to people, and it's turned into like kind of a myth, the old bag, the Cheshire ghost, or what, Wicked Jenny, you know. It has actually happened, and it's turned into something else. And I thought this right kind of touches on that, and I thought it captures it well.
Absolutely, absolutely, and you make a really good point there. I like that quote. And, yeah, I mean, there were, like, for example, touching on the idea that what you said is some people believe that the myth of Wicked Jenny came about because the duckweed that grows in still water, it grows together to where it makes this carpet of almost solid ground. And when you step on it, you sink beneath, and because of the way the duckweed grows, it's extremely difficult to get backed up. So wonderful observations there. I really like, I'm glad that Kingsley Medland was inspired, and I like his presentation of this story, you know, and the familiarity of it, like how he delves into the history of it. I really particularly like, across the plains you hear a scream as I snatch up another small child. I'm a thing from English folklore, but these mists are from something someone once saw. So wonderful lines there, and very well done. All right, Bex, what do you got for us next?
Cursed by Jenny Greenteeth, by Bill Schiller. I was cursed by Jenny Greenteeth for spitting in her ponds. She cursed me to despise the night and despair of her deeds every dawn. But by night my skin melts to reveal what lies in disguise. There is a monster buried within me, other eyes not allowed to see. When twilight arrives, as day wearily ceases to be, my hands turn to claws as a predator on the prowl. With six shots of bourbon, any provocation prompts me to howl. Gnashing of teeth, hairs on edge, disconcerned by my rash, that fright, I race through the streets, relishing every chance to start a fight. My rage lacks all reason. All devotion to grace gives way to Jesus. A devilish dog, more hawk than man. Good ones embrace slips from hands. Yet each dawn I come to grips with my slips and travesty of night. That witch in the green tea had one bitch of a nasty bite. As sun fully shines, month resigns, and flesh of man is resets. I happily play fetch and wag my tail and sing joy and respect. By day there is no barking, nor sparks to start a fight. But acting is barred by desperation in contemplation of coming night. And
wonderful read there, Rex. And what a great dark write by Bill Schiller. I really enjoyed this one. And Dexter, your thoughts?
I thought that this was a fantastic write, and it reminded me a lot of, I've been in this rut, and I apologize to the poet of comparison, and I don't mean to compare it because I feel like that takes away from it, but it reminds me of A Werewolf in London, the movie from 1982. It's one of my favorite movies of all time, but it has that, you know, it captures that that buildup, that feeling that they have, you know, of, you know, the anxiety of knowing, or maybe that you're about to turn or something. It just has that anxiety of pacing the room, and, you know, I think he paces the room to Werewolves of London. So, I mean, it's just a fantastic poem, and I just really enjoyed it.
Oh, absolutely. I think that was a great comparison, because, yes, you can definitely see the anxiety of the transformation. So great comment there. And Rex, you did a wonderful read of that. Wait, did you read? Yeah, you did read that, right?
Yeah.
I apologize. Okay. Well, I have no doubt it was a wonderful read. And your thoughts?
I like what, and I'll go a step further. There is a note to this because of the last line in that first stanza of a Jekyll and Hyde. With six shots of bourbon, any provocation prompts me to howl. So there's a note. It goes back to that age-old axiom where temperance comes to rear its head, where alcohol is turning man into beasts. No one is safe on the streets. So you get that Jekyll and Hyde moment where you are what you are past the moment of those six shots, which you know you shouldn't have. But you can't stop yourself anyway because you're an alcoholic to the thought, just like Jekyll was an alcoholic to his liquid turning into Hyde. So that works really nicely with that. I like the thought of this and the full understanding. He calls himself and refers to himself as a dog, but more hog than anything else because of the rancor that he gets into. He thoroughly enjoys it by offering up the note of consternation when it comes to the coming of the night. Because he knows he's going to be back in that bar, he's going to have another six shots, and he's going to go out and terrorize them all.
Very cool. Great opportunity.
I think the Jenny Green Teeth that he sits here, that witch Jenny Green Teeth, has one bitch, a nasty bite, is the liquor.
Huh. I like that. You know, and That would make sense. That would make sense. And, you know, or, yeah, maybe, what's that app, what is it called, Absinthe?
Yep.
Yeah, maybe he's sipping on the old green fairy. But wonderful observations there. And I like the comparison to the Jekyll and Hyde type idea of a change in personality. You know, I thought this was a wonderful write all the way through. I like how he went with more length than usual with his write. It was wonderful storytelling style. I like how this is a first-person narrative, and it touches, You can see the inspiration of Jenny Greenteeth, and yet it goes so much deeper. I like that it's a tale of revenge. You know, I was cursed by Jenny Greenteeth after spitting in her pond. I thought that was a wonderful open lines, and to me can touch on a couple different ideas. One, perhaps the way we treat nature will have consequences. But also, you know, spitting is such a gesture of disrespect. You can't help but think that, again, you're thinking of consequences, but perhaps you spit upon, not literally but metaphorically, upon someone else or even upon yourself. I did really like, my rage lacks all reason, all devotion to grace gives way to treason. A devilish dog, more hog than man, good one, embrace slips from the hand. And there is that idea of something or someone, perhaps an addiction, that changes someone's personality. And then the calm, the happiness that comes with the morning light, and such a great look at the dark changes of personality. So wonderful, wonderful lines and very well done. And what do you got for us next, Rex?
Jenny Greenteeth by Weaver of Dreams. And you got a sample of that?
Yes, we do. All right. So let me mosey on over and pull that one up. And here we go.
In the deepest, darkest, most dismal realm, all that is evil surrounds me. In the depths of depravity I dwell, where my only companion is misery. So many dire deeds haunt me, I now know this in-between place has no tomorrow. Not one word or prayer will save me from limbo. Racked with guilt and grief, I weep in sorrow. If I could atone for my past, I would do it. For there is no comfort to be found in this dark domicile that bleeds despair. You will find I hide deep underground.
Wonderful read and write, Weaver. Thank you for the SoundCloud. It is very much appreciated. And Rex, let's start with your thoughts.
She's actually asking you to feel sorry for her, but that's actually just the bites that get you to walk within her world, which means you're just the next meal on the list. So I like the thought of offering up the angle of, feel pity on me, because this is not what I asked for, but it is what I am akin to. Yes. It still bleeds, it still needs, and it'll still eat.
Absolutely. And you're right, it does use sympathy as a way to lure somebody in and to create, as you said, that sympathy, that empathy for the monster. So I like her take on the prompt, and wonderful comment there, Rex. And Dexter, your thoughts.
Well, I'm going to say something that maybe is kind of highly charged, or maybe, and so I don't mean to make your guys a show a part of that, but to me, that I took this right as almost an angle of PTSD. I think that there were some killers even in our military, that have signed up for the darkest of deeds. And now they have, now people have PTSD and things like this, are these things just covering up how dark of a person you were? Because a lot of the people that were on the front lines of a lot of our military, and a lot of times of people on the front lines of doing some haunting acts, signed up for it. So, which came first, the chicken or the egg? And I don't know if that was the angle that she wrote, but to me, I just got the feeling of not PTSD that came upon you, but almost PTSD that was asked for. And so I thought that this was very interestingly written.
I like that, actually. That's a really great take. And I like that you brought that offering up to the table. I think it fits very well with the show and the particular prompt. And there are people who go into areas of work that will satisfy their dark nature. So great observation. And I really like this all the way through. I like the first person narrative. I like the look at someone who is extremely dark. Like, I have to say, I think out of all our rights, this one has taken in a particularly dark angle. I like how there is that idea of that sympathy looked for, that luring in, and that almost that desire for that lust for darkness. I really thought this had some wonderful alliteration on a technical level. And I like so many dire deeds haunt me. I now know that this in-between place has no tomorrow. And if I could atone for my past, I would do it, for there is no comfort to be found in this dark domicile that leads despair. It kind of gives thought to me the phrase biting off more than you can chew, and just powerful lines and intriguing dark write and very well done. And what do you got for us next, Rex?
Judging by DJGS117, that one's yours.
Didn't DJ have a SoundCloud?
Oh, yeah. Okay. Never mind.
Yep. All right. I'll go ahead and play that. Here we go.
Jenny Green Teeth by E.J. Cool.
Wrong one.
In the Lake District of Cumbria County, where sun-glossed bodies are threaded together,
wrong one.
The hand
right.
of death harvests a bloat.
Maybe she attached. Okay. Let me check what's going on here. Maybe she changed the poem or something.
I said DJGS, not
oh,
EJ.
I thought you said EJ. Okay, I wasn't looking. Okay. All right, then I will go ahead. My apologies. I misunderstood. All right, then I will go ahead and give this a read. All right. Drudging by DJGS117, and it goes like
this.
Well,
it does look like this one. It does have a SoundCloud, but if you don't have it, give it a read. But I'm just saying it does look at the bottom. It does have a SoundCloud.
It does have a SoundCloud, but unfortunately,
okay.
It was one I did not notice, so I'll just go ahead
okay.
and read it.
No
yeah.
problem.
Yeah, but thank you. And drudging. Liquid pumping, encouraging, scourging, basing, solvent, mutating, contempt, anguished, fragrance, unkempt, present, planters blend, decrepitly pleasant, stereotin creation, flabbergasted situation, grotesque orchestration, cantankerous separation, tapestry of quiddity, rhizomes contemporaneous, fails us wilted, phantasmagorically fetid, and home. And I apologize for not noticing that SoundCloud. Sometimes when somebody is new to writing for shows and I'm not used to them putting in SoundCloud, I don't always think to check. So my apologies, but that was a wonderful dark write. And Dexter.
Well, I'll be honest, this one is brilliantly written, but I would almost have to come back to this one with a dictionary, because I feel like he captured this one in a lot of different adjectives and just the way that he described this. Maybe I'm bullshitting. Maybe I can understand it here a little bit when I'm looking at it again. But it almost feels like just a highlight of vocabulary, which isn't a bad thing, because I think that a lot of times horror is so dumbed down, especially in movies. But for the most part, horror lots of times gets dumbed down, and so that I appreciate that he elevated his level of description, and so I thought it was a great write.
Oh, absolutely, and you're right. Sometimes some rights, because of the word choice, and you have to get into and read more than once and have a dictionary next to you. And you made a really good point about how oftentimes, especially in horror movies, darkness can be dumbed down, and there was an intelligent approach to this. And Rex, your thoughts?
Got to go along the lines of Swamp Thing. Sometimes you forget that which you experiment with bites you in the ass. Mutating contempt. The mutating hits on the note of contempt itself, but also the fact that this is a mutation, something that offers up another side to that which is has been done to it. Anguished, fragrant, unkempt, present. Plants is blend, decrepitly pleasant. Plants is blend, again, that note to a mixing of material, decrepitly pleasant. You get that note to the striation creation, again, the put together of particles not meant to be together. Flabbergasted satiation. And then you're flabbergasted at the fact that the thing is hungry as all shit. Then you hit up grotesque orchestration. Again, right back to the thought of creation and cantankerous vibration. Again, feeding into the need to feeding. Tapestry of quiddity, rhizomes contemporaneous. Again, that walks back to what you find in the laboratories and what people are playing with. And the thought, sail dust wilted, phantasmagorically fetid. Now, there's an idea of creating, but it's short-lived. And fetid, as it finishes, the stench that's left over from our own stupidity.
I like that. Wonderful observations there, Rex, and on the whole idea, and I have to agree with you, of how the monsters that people create that come back to them, and a Swamp Thing was a great comparison. I really did like this all the way through with its visceral imagery and great word choices, but I especially like bathing solvent, mutating contempt, styration creation, flabbergasted citation, grotesque orchestration. You know, there's the whole idea of putting a darkness, a horror into action. I also like the phrase fails us. It's almost like, to me, the thought of trying to stop the horror of our creation and not being able to. And I like how it's very visceral, and you can see the ugliness within the lines. Wonderfully written and very well done. And what do you got for us next, Rex?
Swamp Goblin by Daniel Guillain. And Dex, that's for you, brother.
All right. This is my pretext. I got to do him justice here on this, right? I apologize for what I did. I got to me. So anyway, Swamp Goblin. Beware the goblin of Lockmore, because when the cursed clock strikes 12, a diabolical creature stalks his prey. Always keep a candle burning and a watch die on your young, because in the dead of night, the goblin Lockmore searches for his prey. He wishes to capture innocent children's souls and bring them back to his swamp as a messenger for a demon's blood. Only prayer can disrupt his evil intentions, and light blinds him so he can't see. He is honor bound by dark night, by dark light. No child can ever be retrieved from the goblin. Once he digs his claws into them, lost little souls trapped in dark limbo, pulled into the slimy pit of vile stench, never to see the light again. Poor little children poured into the wrath of a dark demon. Only the sword of Gabriel can set them free, because it holds the power of righteous, unfused in its shiny blade. End poem.
Wonderful read there, Dexter, and a great dark tale of warning from Daniel Duhaime. And Rex, your thoughts?
Oh, I like this, but I do believe he made one little slight error. That last line, it should read infused in its shiny blade, the notion of the power of the righteous that Gabriel swings within that blade is infused, not unfused. So outside of that, that's not a big deal. But it does hit on the notion of something a little different, Goblin of Lockmore. I wonder if this might be something that Daniel came across that we haven't heard about yet, striking 12. It does hit on that notion. Nothing ever good happens after midnight. And the idea of, again, keep a candle burning, watchful eye on your young. There is that note, candle burning. This walks back in time a bit. And again, the repeat, the goblin of Lockmore searches for his prey. And then there's that note here of he needs the children's souls because they are part of some kind of ritual as a messenger for a demon's blood. So in order to raise a demon, he needs those little children's souls and purity that sits within them, as opposed to older creatures who have probably sinned by the time he might get around to them. And the back end of this hits on that note of all things unto God come into him who set them free and let them rest easy, heaven bound. Then Gabriel needs to spend that sword. It's
absolutely.
Kind of, there's a kind of note to that that last thing of Constantine.
Oh yeah, it does kind
Gabriel
of help with the mental idea.
Wasn't a very pleasant angel in that one.
Yep, and you're right. There was within those lines, as you were commenting, I was thinking how it really focused on the battle between good and evil, and as you mentioned, there's that idea of needing that innocence. Than the darkness within. So excellent comment there, Rex. And Dexter, your thoughts?
Yeah, I thought this was a fantastic write. You know, this had a lot of the feel of a mythical thing. And it brought up a lot of the real realization of historical times. You know, right now we can, you know, there's still a fear of the dark a little bit, but right now we can fire up a flashlight right on our cell phones, and all of us always have that on us. And I think that this here keys in and features on the historical feeling of the dark being this mysterious unknown that allowed, you know, before the internet and everything was explored and all of these things, there could be goblins out there. You know, you don't know what there is. You would have looked out your cabin window or whatever, there's dark forest. You know, who the hell knows what's out there? And I thought that this captured the fear of that. So I thought it was a great piece.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And, yeah, you're right, because, you know, there throughout history there has been so much that, you know, we can't for sure say what is or isn't out there. This is a great take on the prompt. I really like how this looks into almost a spirituality angle to the prompt. And I like how he looked at the picture and he wrote about what he saw rather than necessarily writing about the legend of Jenny Greenteeth. He took it in the angle, like, I like that he chose to go with a goblin, you know, goblins being evil, but yet at the same time, you often think of them as mischievous, which, you know, to me, just seems slightly lighter than evil, and yet within this, there's just a darkness that, that idea that spirituality, the battle between good and evil that cannot be seen. And, you know, I really like this all the way through, but especially the imagery of pulled into the slimy pit of vile stench, never to see the light again, poor little children pulled into the wraith of a dark demon. So wonderful line, very well done. And what do you got for us next, Rex?
Blaze Away by David Philip Ireland. There's danger in the shadows and half-light. At night, the race days. Magenta streaks, the oil-slick streets. As new decays to gray, blaze away. Nighthawk waits with bated breath, looking for easy prey. The faceless name, the graceless, the midnight fade away. Blaze away. South side, east side, the beauty and the beast side. The nightmare and the dream. The dull thud of cold blood overkill. The red light siren scream. Blaze away. And fall.
Wonderful read there, Rex. And a great write by David Philip Ireland. Now, Rex, I don't know if you saw it, but I did want to mention that I had sent you a message. So, and Dexter, your thoughts on this write?
This was a write that was very well done. It almost felt like the Son of Sam or something along those lines, where it was like kind of a killer in the, you know, obviously the inner city has killers, but inner city or like, I don't want to say the inner city. I got to watch my words here, but, you don't typically think of that as like your serial killer or your out to get you killer. You know, there's a lot of people that are afraid of the country folk. And so I felt like almost Blaze Away, it was almost a play on fade away, Dixieland, you know, it almost had that kind of a feel to it. But it was an inner city tale of a killer. So I don't know. I just thought that this was a very intriguing write.
It really was. And it's always interesting how reality and mythology can blend together, where a prompt like this can make so many people write things that make us think of serial killers. I do like how you mentioned there's this idea of someone who kind of, you know, waiting amongst the alleys. I know you didn't say exactly, but, you know, I'm paraphrasing. The whole idea of someone who's just waiting within the city for that moment to strike. So excellent comment. And Rex, You did a wonderful read of that. Your thoughts?
It's funny you brought up that song reference, Deck. I was thinking Smile Away by McCartney off that second album of his back in 71. I met a friend the other day. He said, man, I could smell your breath a mile away. Smile away, smile away, smile away. It got that that creepy intonation of a stereotype killer. Nighthawk, wasted, bated breath, looking for easy prey. The faceless name, the graceless, the midnight fadeaway, blaze away. There is that note to melting into the darkness, that thought of Jack the Ripper, those that get away, and the dull thud, cold blood, overkill, the red light siren scream, blaze away. That note of living in the moment, no one knows who or what you are, and they never know who or what you are, really are.
I like that. I like that thought. The idea of bringing up the idea of like a Jack the Killer, someone who perhaps will never be caught, will never be known for what they truly are. I thought this had wonderful imagery throughout. It was an excellent dark write about like someone who has a truly dark mind, horrific mind, and the nightmare that they live within themselves, but also the nightmare they create in the city. You know, I really like the imagery of magenta streaks, the oil slick street as blue decays to gray. And then the mention of Nighthawk waits with bated breath. You know, it made me think of not only the fact that somebody who, like, really the nighttime is their element. It made me actually think of the painting Nighthawks by Edward Hopper, which is the people sitting in a cafe at nighttime, and they're kind of all sitting separate and very lonely. And it just gives you the idea of someone you can imagine, you know, sitting there observing everybody at nighttime, planning their next kill. And the repetitiveness of Blaze Away worked really well. And I thought it was cool how both of you had different songs that popped into your mind when you saw those lines. So excellent comments and a strong write. Very well done. And what do you got for us next, Rex?
Jenny Greenteeth by Oren Sankwat.
All right. Does that one have a SoundCloud?
Yep.
Okie dokie. And that one I believe I actually got in there, so let me find that. Here we go.
Jenny Greenteeth by Ohms. A pale neck bent before the flame, in quiet yearning. A woman weaving on her frame, a fire burning. As wind ignites the ember's light, her fair face glowing. Sad features wrenched from black of night, with bruises showing. A voice comes from within the fire, a serpent stirring, and holy whispers of desire, the shadows blurring. A promise sharper than a knife, her soul releases, the darkness ends her mortal life, her heart in pieces. She leaves behind the hearth's embrace, down by the river. She sinks below without a trace, the reeds all shiver. Soon near the water, laughter drifts, a young one lingers. The duckweed trembles as she lifts her greening fingers. The promise was to have a child to fill her belly. She feasts upon her wish, defiled, a rotten jelly. He beat the children out her womb, then called her barren. She dragged him to a watery tomb, to meet with Karen. The years have filled the rivers deep, with bones now teeming, as Jenny feels the mosses sweep, her green teeth gleaming. The ripples spread, ahead slow rise, the curse returning. A hunger in her emerald eyes, a fire burning. End poem.
Wonderful read and write, Oren. Thank you for the SoundCloud. It is very much appreciated. I really like this take on the prompt. I like how she shows us a more human side to the story. It almost, to me, feels like the before Jenny's green teeth became Jenny Green Teeth. Or perhaps, you know, there's two different thoughts I have, is that the woman isn't Jenny Green Teeth herself, but rather someone who decides to use Jenny Green Teeth's appetite to take revenge. But either way, there's, to me, a very sad, very human story here of abuse and a woman who is unloved and hurt and beaten and loses children and gets blamed for the loss of her children. And I really liked this all the way through, but what especially stood out to me was, soon near the water, laughter drifts, a young one lingers, the duckweed trembles as she lifts her greening fingers. The promise was to have a child to fill her belly. She peeps upon her wish to file the rotten jelly. He beat the children out of her womb, then called her barren. He dragged him to a watery tomb to meet with Charon. I like that she put Charon in there, so bringing another mythology into another one. So wonderful use of imagery, a dark, extremely dark and haunting rite on the idea of consequences or revenge for one's hurtful actions. So wonderfully written and very well done. And your thoughts, Dexter?
Yeah, I thought this piece was terrific. You know, and I don't mean that, I guess it's an extremely dark piece, but there's that, you know, saying hell has no fury like a woman scorned. You know, this woman has all the ammunition in the world to be the woman scorned. And so I just love how he, you know, embraces that and tells the story behind that. This isn't just a creature. This creature was created. And like many creatures, even creatures of man, was created by man, you know. And so I thought that this was a very, and I don't mean this in a negative way, a feminist writing, but I thought that this was a very captivating piece.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. Great observations there. And Rex, I'd like your thoughts, and then I'd like you to bring us on to our last SoundCloud write, which is Jenny Green Teeth by E.J. Cool.
All right. It's dark and disturbing and gives a noted reprieve for Jenny Green Teeth as far as giving her background, her character background, as to why she is what she is. But that thought to her, she dragged him to a water tomb to meet with Karen. It's a nice note to that, but there's also there's no pennies for the ferryman, so he gets to be delivered up to hell at that point. The back angle, again, this is the one where she takes her wrath out on every man from there on in because of filled the river's deep with bones now teeming, and Jenny feels the mosses sweep, her green teeth gleaming, ripples spread ahead to rise, the curse returning, a hunger in her emerald eyes, a fire burning. She finishes out with the fire burning, which was the end line to the opening stanza too, which had promise in it before it went sour, going south.
Absolutely. And I like that you mentioned the thought that there's no coins, that it's a delivery straight to hell. So great observations there.
You got
to
pay the ferryman.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Very cool. Very cool. And what do we got next?
Jenny Green Teeth by EJ Cool.
All right. Well, we might go a little over, but not very long. The show will go off the air, but the comments, you know, so stick with me, gentlemen. The comments will be on the recorded version if we go off the air. Before I play this SoundCloud, I do want to mention that the carryovers will be played on next week's Break On Through. This is actually our last Into the Darkness show. The Dark Show for Late Night Poets starting next week will be on every other Saturday, will be The Solace of Shadows with Robert M. And Rex and I will be doing every Friday after midnight Break On Through. And so I just wanted to let people know that, and also wanted to let people know how thankful I've been to Rex and I have been to all of you. For those who write for the show, who call in, you know, and who, you know, write and just, you know, shared your darkness with us. And, you know, with that being said, I'm going to go ahead and play the sound card. So here we go.
Jenny Green Teeth by EJ Cool. In the Lake District of Cumbria County, where sun-glossed bodies are threaded together, the hand of death harvests a bloated bounty, echoing green valleys feathered with heather. Beware the waters fed by black-blooded veins. There lurks the serrate maw of myth and legend, draped in pondweed veils and toxic algae chains, seldom seen, save for those doomed to meet their end. In the shallows she hides with sunken white eyes, distorted by stagnant surface scum spittle. Under the shifting clouds of stormy gray skies, she sharpens xanthus nails, ragged and brittle. Skeletal arms and fingers snake through the grass, where want waits with the calm of a crocodile. Tangles snatch the ankles of children who pass, ensnared by naivety and monstrous guile. Far below the reach of bleached halcyon rays, forests of corpses sway in the murky mire. A scavenger's feast makes a moldering maze, whose halls vaunt the laurels of aqueous ire. With each carcass collected, tethered and moored, the swarming thicket spreads septic infection. Bubbling methane froths from a rotting flesh hoard, shattering the cracked glass of Earth's reflection.
Wonderful read and write. Thank you, EJ, for the SoundCloud. It is very much appreciated. And Dexter, your thoughts?
Yeah, I love this SoundCloud, and I love this poem. I like EJ's writing. But one part that brought it to life for me for real was the calm of a crocodile. You know, sometimes we exclude ourselves as people from the predators of the earth, you know. But the truth is that, like a crocodile, there's predators out there that are willing to lie in wait, willing to take their time, to be patient. That's the scary part. That's the scary part of this world. And she captured all of that, I felt, for me, and she brought that to give that comparison or juxtaposition or whatever you want to say in that crocodile line. I thought this was a fantastic writing, chilling.
Absolutely, you're right. It is chilling, and I like that you focused on the part about the crocodile and how so many, there's so much evil out there that's willing to wait patiently for what it wants. So excellent, Samit. And Rex, your thoughts?
Stark, deliberate, and descriptive. Sunglass body threaded together, echoing green valleys feathered with heather, pondweed veils, toxic algae chain. It's quite the note to adding flavor to the surroundings to give it the proper noted tone. That line with the crocodile was good, but also a scavenger speech makes a moldering maze whose vaults haunt the laurels of aqueous ire. With each carcass collected, tethered and moored, the swarming thicket spreads septic infections. Bubbling methane froths from the rocking flesh void. Shatter the glass, averts reflection. So it's not just the moment. It's also offering up the poison that comes further on, which will be those who collect water from this place will also perish. And then it's offering that note of the pond itself offering up that note, shattering the cracked glass of Earth's reflection, kind of the note to, beware the monsters one creates.
I like that. You're right. And this is extremely dark. It is wonderfully descriptive, and there is a purposefulness to it. And I like the idea of, as you said, beware of the monster that one creates. I thought on a technical level, this was a brilliant poem, great rhyme and flow, great alliteration. I really like how it takes in that tale of warning, beware the waters fed by black-blooded veins. There lurks the serrate maw of myth and legend draped in pondy veils and toxic algae chains. I also really liked the lines of far below the reach of bleached halcyon rays, forests of corpses sway in the murky mire. Wonderful lines there, and the whole idea of the bodies that are collected beneath the weeds. So amazing dark right and very well done. And it sounds, Rex, like your cats would like to share their thoughts on the poem too.
Yeah, she wants food.
Spoiled. Well, I have to say it's been really great doing the Into the Darkness show. I've really enjoyed it. I've enjoyed tonight's show. Thank you, as always, Rex, for being a wonderful co-host. Thank you, Dexter, for calling in and being here with us. Appreciate your time and your voice. Thank you to everyone who wrote for the show, was listening while it was on air, or will be listening later. We truly appreciate you all. And please make sure to check out all the contests and topic boards put up by our late night poets, hosts, and hostesses, because you're sure to find something to inspire. And have a good night, everyone.
Good night, gang.